Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is Sandra Madigan, Executive Vice President of Product Strategy at ICE, to talk about servicing technology and how lessons learned in 2020 are still driving innovations today. Sandra, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure meeting with you.
It's great to have you on. So we are here at the ICE Experience EXP event for 2024. It's been really fun. Packed with people, lots of people interacting with the technology and looking at different things they can do. I moderated a panel. I've been, listening to different panels. So it's been a really great experience. So, I wanted to say thank you for that. And also, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you was to talk about your servicing technology that you guys are doing. So I got a chance to go over, kind of look at how people are doing that and how your team is actually talking to them in a live interactive UX experience so they know what their users want. So lots to talk about, but let's start first with a little bit about your background. Tell us a little bit about how you got to be where you are.
Yeah, so the first thing that will surprise you is that my degree is in actual psychology. I'm not a technology major, I'm not a business major, but I think that has given me a different insight and different view. I've talked to you before about like empathetic-led product development. I like to think my psychology background brings that into play to do that. In one way or another in my career, I've always been in the real estate-ish type of way. I started out managing apartments, so rentals, right? It's a type of housing that, some would argue we need a lot more of in this country today. And then slowly migrated onto commercial real estate. That was definitely interesting and different. A lot of people tend to think that commercial real estate, mortgage, same thing. Lots of differences in both of those worlds. Made my way over to Merrill Lynch to manage a home equity portfolio and did like more of the finance side, the trading, secondary market of those, swaps, hedges, all that good stuff. And then I had the opportunity to come at the time it was LPS. They were the system technology that we used. And it really challenged me to look at a different facet of our industry, right? No longer just originating or trading in the secondary market, but now the technology that feeds that. And I can tell you now with ICE, it is, if you ever listen to our earnings calls, it is mind-boggling. I live in awe of Jeff Sprecher and Ben Jackson, our leaders, because they keep tabs. Like Jeff especially understands mortgage technology to a degree that you don't expect a CEO to do. But in that same breath, he can talk to you about futures and the New York Stock Exchange and oil and this and that. And it's just fascinating being part of such a big company now.
Let's drill down to servicing specifically. And, I'd love for you to tell me a little bit about MSP DX, which is the digital experience, which you guys are just now rolling out.
We're absolutely rolling it out. It's been under construction probably for a year. Clients go into production with our escrow module this March, actually next week, which is really exciting. And I know you're probably going like, why is it taking you a year to just do escrow? One of the things that I am fascinated of the way that we designed and constructed MSP DX is its core foundation. And we've really made sure that our developer experience was as unique and as frictionless as what we're delivering now to servicers for their back office experience. I met with the mortgage advisory group yesterday and they were all looking at me like, why are you so excited about the developer experience? It seems so silly. But for them, it's really going to give us the ability to accelerate feature delivery to them because my developer team no longer has to worry. The engineers don't have to worry about how to do registration, how to authorize users. Well, all those things are already accounted in this beautiful core. So now it's just a matter of accelerating the delivery of functionality. And it is completely conversational. You got a chance to see it. It is jarring. The first time the UX team, Eric Skinner's team, presented it to James, my technology partner, and I, it took me back. I'm like, I'm used to that conversational. I text all the time. I mean, let's face it, I would rather text Delta when my bag is delayed and all that than I would actually call and speak to somebody. So it's not that it wasn't familiar, but I had not made mentally the leap that this could actually work in mortgage and then in mortgage servicing of all things, right? Because mortgage servicing and our big logo with DX is we're making mortgage simple, We're not simplifying mortgage. And people are like, why do you differentiate the two? Mortgage is always going to be complicated. There's investors, there's regulation, there's all that. We can't, as a technology company, simplify those things. But I can sure as heck make it simple for users to interact with the technology and to remove all the friction from it. So that's what we aim to do. And I'm so happy that you got to see it. You got to see how we interact with our customers. I am thrilled that this is rolling out. It is really going to change servicing forever.
Well, let's talk about how you think about technology. So I was asking you earlier about generative AI, because this is says conversational servicing. So the first thing I think of is like Gen AI.
Yep.
So how do you think about that specifically, or how you guys are leveraging AI versus other things?
Yeah. So it's a really interesting question. And I will tell you, if you and I were having this conversation a year ago, 2 years ago, you would have probably asked me about blockchain.
Right? I would, yeah.
And if it was 4 years ago, you probably would have asked me about cloud computing and APIs. For us, whether it's generative AI, large language models, quantum computing, you name the technology for technology's sake does not bring any value to the industry. What the industry needs is for us to leverage the best technology available to address their problems and deliver solutions. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you like, okay, specifically, we're going to use this piece and this. Like, what our customers are asking from ICE is for us to deliver solutions that reduce that cost to serve. How we choose to do that in the background, I mean, if I had 100 squirrels running on a treadmill powering this thing up, they really don't care so long it's efficient, it scales, it delivers, and addresses a business need. So, yes, we will use all the tools available. And today we're talking about this. A year from now, we're going to meet at Experience again, and there's going to be a new thing out there, and we'll have this conversation again. And if it fits the need of what we need to deliver, we will definitely leverage all the tools that we have.
I think that's a really interesting take. So, you know, you guys have this legacy of technology, yes. And, you know, we talk about technical debt. Yeah. So here you are rolling out something new. How does that relate to the technical debt, if you want to say that, or your legacy technology that's already in place?
Yeah. So let's call a spade. We're talking about the mainframe and MSP. What people don't realize about mainframes is mainframes are really good at what they do. Most of the people that came here to Experience probably booked an airline ticket. Most airline ticket, the actual ticketing and processing of your ticket takes place on a mainframe. When you get your explanation of benefits from your healthcare provider, if you were to go to the big healthcare, Blue Cross Blue Shield, or any of those, they're working on a mainframe systems. Mainframes are really good at processing huge amounts of data in a specific time. What they're not able to do is to provide the right experience in the digital age. So the workloads, that expectation of real time, of crunching things quickly, that they were never designed to do. So right now, MSP, the back, the core, the system of record that our customers are used to, that is going to stay in place. What we're building is this layer that abstracts that user from having to know how this works into this beautiful conversation. Tech debt will always be there. I can tell you as a product person, when we work, when we look at our backlogs of what we do, we find an equal balance because it does you no good. You're absolutely right to take tech debt with you. It becomes expensive. It's part of our normal software development lifecycle. We address those things as they come. So yes, I were looking to modernize the mainframe, absolutely. But to me, that project is completely independent of being able to deliver a delightful user experience on the front end.
Interesting. Well, let's talk a little bit more about servicing, because I feel like servicing is just fraught with peril from so many, you know, you think about the origination experience, that's one thing. Complicated enough. Servicing, you have a lot more people involved in some ways, yes. Right? And so much more communication. And a lot of times it might be that your borrower doesn't even understand what a servicer is, why they're, you know, who is this person who's sending me these things now? Sometimes it gets sold. They're often in the dark. Meanwhile, that's the person that you have to communicate very yes. important things to. So talk to me a little bit about when you're developing anything in servicing, what you're thinking about.
Yeah. So we call it that empathetic-led approach to product development. We look at what the end user experience needs to be, what they feel, what they think, how is this going to resonate with them, and translate that all the way to the back office. I can tell you when we launched Servicing Digital back in 2018, there was nothing like it in the market because good, better, and different in the servicing world, we were ostriches. We felt that if we just took your payment, you know, we'll hide our heads in the ground. If we just take your payment and do what we have to do, if you ever default on the loan, that's good enough. But when you really think about that end consumer, you're right, origination, there's a lot of technology out there. How long do you sit in that process? At most, and this is if you're a bad originator, right? 60 days.
Right.
It takes 60 days to close a loan. How long are you in servicing? And now with interest rates where they are, I can tell you personally, I took a 15-year loan. I'm at like 2 3/4, I think. I'm never refinancing that loan. So they're stuck with me for 15 years. That's a long time. How did we never deliver that experience? Well, enter servicing digital. It did. And that same framework that we took at looking at that end consumer to deliver an awesome product, we're doing now with MSPDX and delivering that to them in that same way. You have to, the ability to retain a customer, of keeping them happy, of making things simple to understand. Escrow is so complicated. We have videos now where we could actually explain to you based on the changes that you've made, what does your escrow statement is really telling you? And again, the regulation will be there. The investor requirements will be there. I don't think we'll ever get away from that. That does not give us a hall pass to not making things simple for that end user.
What was 2020 like? Like, how did you guys really, like, it changed everything,
it
but
did.
Especially when you think about servicing and the expectations and the incredible ramp up that you had to do to offer forbearance, to do all these things. Tell me a little bit about how that reverberates through what you're doing right now.
No, so we, I think, all learned a ton what we were capable to and where we had big gaping holes, right, in our processes and everything else. We got sent home. 2 weeks, everybody's going to be back. That's what everybody thought, right? In 2 weeks, we'll be back. Then come the regulation around forbearances. You have to be able to offer a forbearance. Everybody's working remote. Nobody can go to a branch. Contact centers are having huge call delays because everybody's working from home. Your internet is not set up, right? Like your business internet, to be able to take that many calls from home. So from a technology perspective, what can we do? And this is where the change that we undertook 2 years prior to that really allowed us to pivot. So we're a complete agile shop. We think in tiny increments, we call them program increments. The most we look out is 3 months in time of decisioning. We have 2 week sprints where we deliver code into UAT. We provided our clients the ability through Servicing Digital for you to request a forbearance and process it lights out through the system in 2 sprints. So 4 weeks, it was in production in clients' hands. We had over 3 million borrowers request forbearance through Servicing Digital. If you had told me 3 years ago, prior to 2020, that that's what we would have been able to do, I would have told you there is no way. But our hand was forced by the pandemic. And it made servicers more nimble. It made them more willing to look at newer features and adopt them quickly. Did we stumble? We all did. We all learned from that. But it truly transformed our view of the possible of what can be done in short increments when we all play nice in the sandbox together.
What are some of the lessons that you took from that into developing this MSPDX?
Yeah, listening to our customers. So with MSPDX, we have 3 partners that have signed on since the beginning with us. We do site visits with them. We literally share with them A/B testing. What do you think about this? What do you look at this? Which one works better? They're committed. Having a client at the table is so important. And again, for our clients, it's given the ability of saying, okay, she's saying MVP. That doesn't mean she's going to stop there. This is just the base that we need that we go into production and then we add from there versus the way we used to do things in the old days when we'd have, you know, 18-month-old project logs and we would go deliver and then. And by the time everything got into production, it was a day late and a dollar short, right? We've moved on to the new thing. I think our entire industry has now shifted that mindset that smaller increments are better and we can pivot. Like if you think about it, delivering code, I put something into UAT, the 3 partners may go, that doesn't work. Nope, that's never going to work. How much time and money have I lost in doing that? 2 weeks. Like I'll make 2 week mistakes every day to get it right. Versus the old way of taking 18 months and millions of dollars invested. So I think that's what we learned from the pandemic of being nimble enough to change on the fly.
So one of the things that about servicing is communicating with the borrower in a way that the borrower wants to be communicated with. And and we'll see, right? Like if you send me an email, I'm just telling you, if you send me an email, good luck.
Yep,
you know, on a personal level, my personal inbox is, we won't talk about it. It's not good. So, you know, if my service firm wants to do something, that's not the best way, but then well, do they have my phone number? I don't even know. Do they? I'm not sure. So when you think about that, was that one of the biggest lifts in 2020? Is like, how do we contact all these people in a way that they will be able to get that information and then answer back?
Yeah. So think about it. We launched Servicing Digital 2018, 2019, 2020. We had 2 years under our belt of borrowers being used to interacting with this Servicing Digital application. We gave them enough features that you kept coming back. Think about your phone, how many apps you download once and then you're like, never go back. Servicing Digital has become really sticky with our clients' customers. So when the pandemic hit, that was the channel, right? You send them an app notification. I see, I'm with you on email. I could have like thousands of emails unread, but my banking app, if I see a little one next to it, I'm opening that. I'm always paranoid that somebody stole my identity and took all my money. That's the truth. That's why I open them. But if you see that in Servicing Digital, you're bound to open it. And now here comes the message that says, hey, you know, we have this new forbearance tool for you to request. Do you need help? Click here. Done. The ability to send videos. You're right. We have to meet customers where they are, not where we need them to be or where we've delivered technology into that spot. We need to go and meet them where they are. And we've been able to do that. So that borrower notification, you're right. That said, I will tell you, my mom to this day prints every statement. I finally got her enrolled in e-bill. So she gets her electronic notifications. She still prints them. She still has a printed amortization table for her mortgage where she cross-references the payments that she makes.
Wow.
So generationally, you can't just assume that people don't read email. My mom reads every email, prints everything. So you have to be able to deliver in channels. That's what I mean when I said meet them where they are, not where you think you need them to be.
So one of the things that I got to see, as I referenced at the beginning, was at the Experience Conference, you have this giant, long, you know, setup inside the expo hall, and people are coming up and talking directly to your UX engineers about, you know, they're seeing it on a screen. They're like, what do you like about that? How does that not work for you?
Right.
Okay. So, you know, walking them through, taking real time feedback, and then they're going to go back and do that. So how often do you do something like that?
So we meet with our customers regular. That UX team travels quite a bit. They go to our customers' offices. They do a lot of side-by-sides. When we delivered customer service, it was so instrumental for them to actually listen because not all of them have a mortgage background, right? They're awesome designers and they think about the user experience, but they may not truly understand all the intricacy because, again, mortgage is not simple and servicing is not simple. We will make it simple, though. And having them sit side by side and seeing what somebody has to go through to answer the level of knowledge. If I did a demo of customer service for you, you would see how they've incorporated that feedback into what we call call scripting. So now it's intuitive enough that a representative, and we are leveraging some large language models there in order to even beef the ability for the system to give them real-time updates on what they should say and almost like a knowledge-based presentation. But that came from the UX team sitting side by side with our customers. Not everybody can travel. We have some clients that are still completely remote, believe it or not. We'll do it virtually. So another good thing about the pandemic, you have Mural. I mean, I can name tools that all of a sudden got exponential use because of the pandemic. So we'll do that. We'll have the same little thing that you saw with the cards and the comments, except people are doing it remotely. So we've brought that practice. My product team will probably attest to this. Every screen is done by the UX team, and I hold the product team accountable for pixel perfect to what that should look like design. No longer are we designing from the database has these fields, and this is how we think it'd be easiest for our developers to present it in a screen. It's the other way around. It's, again, from the outside in, because that's the team that you saw them. They're talking with the clients. They're getting that feedback, and that is so important, again, because we're designing products for our customers. It's not in a vacuum.
No, it's not. Has the pace of change in technology changed in the last 18 months with generative AI? We talked about how there's always been the new shiny thing. But to me, it feels like, and I do these tech interviews every week, it feels like the pace of change, how it's taking that data and learning and growing is much quicker. What does that look like in servicing?
Yeah, in servicing, and it's funny, we were talking about this at lunch today with a couple of clients. There is so much opportunity for this in what I call middle of the fairway. Without touching the re-underwriting of a loan and decisioning in LawSmith, we don't even need to go there. If you think about things that we can do, models that we're playing with today, when a customer service representative is on the phone, at the end of the call, they have to summarize the notes. A large language model can do that. That inline call, right? Transcript generation of like, here's a summary. Again, the customer service rep will still look at it and say, yes, this is the right summary or this needs to be tweaked. But how much time have we taken away from that process? Automating exceptions, learning on how you like to, if we know that you're going to call because we've seen the data and every time we reanalyze your loan and we tell you you're going to have a new escrow change payment that you're going to call, I should be able to present to that customer service rep. Chances are she's calling about her escrow statement. So now I cut 30 seconds on the call. Doesn't feel like a lot, but add it up. When you're servicing thousands of loans, hundreds of thousands of loans, that makes a huge difference. And those are all areas where we're not making any major decisions where if you called in and I said, are you calling about your escrow statement? And you said, no, I haven't caused you any harm.
Right. But, and if it is, then I go, I feel seen.
Right.
I feel understood.
Right.
Like they know who I am. I'm not just this faceless, nameless person to them. Like they're like, we've connected you to your loan right. and to your concern.
And we know. So to me, the opportunity, there's so much playing again, that middle of the fairway that, yeah, you will have a bunch of companies that are going to try all over the place and all of that. If you're in the trenches with our clients, you see how much ripe opportunity there is right then and there that you don't have to go exploring odd things.
So one of the questions I like to ask tech execs is okay. What keeps you up at night? You know a lot more than the, you know, I mean, you're running different things than maybe other people in the mortgage industry are thinking about. What keeps you up at night?
The generational drift. I see young generations. I mentor a lot at my job. It's one of the things I like the most, probably back to the psychology thing. There is a lack of appetite because of perceived boundaries into owning a home in the younger generation, and it keeps getting later and later. I have interns that are getting ready to graduate college that 10 years ago, they would have been asking me like, you know, how do I put money aside for a down payment? Now they're looking at home ownership. No, I'm not going to buy my first house probably till I'm 35, 40. So now if you're 40, that's the first time you've gotten a home, and 30-year mortgage, do you really want that person 70 years old making that last payment?
Right.
Right. And it worries me from a generation perspective. Like I think about home ownership as a wealth builder. Like if I could have my 18-year-olds, they're going to turn 18 April 1st, actually, if I could have them buy a home now, think about the wealth and the equity that they could build. And somehow in this conversation of high interest rates, high home prices, student debt, that message is getting lost, that they're deferring home ownership. And that does keep me up at night because there's got to be something there that as an industry we can pull together and do for them.
You know, I moderated a panel at Experience today, yep. right before this, and we were talking about how borrowers look at the cost of owning, but they don't always look at the cost of not owning.
Right.
And I think when it comes to yes. wealth creation, if you don't know what you don't know, if you're a young person, you can just see like, well, look at all this I would have to do and it costs so much and all this. But it's like, but what is it costing you every year? And what is it costing you? That 30-year fixed mortgage right. is, you know, one of the things I have Logan Motoshami, our lead analyst, on twice a week. And he was like, this is the wonder of the United States.
It is.
That you can lock in this payment, this debt payment.
For 30 years.
Everything yep. else is, your wages are going to go up, inflation is going to go up, but you're set.
Yep.
And I think that message is just not being, it's not reached maybe the younger people.
It's not. And we need to figure a technology solution for that, that we could get them there, that we can educate them, that we could help them. There's got to be something there. Give me another year. I'll come up with something.
I know you will. Okay. Well, let's end this on, you know, what are you optimistic about as you look at, you know, we've come through a pretty tough year, mm-hmm. Year and a half, 2 years, however you want to look at it, from 2022, the middle of 2022 in this industry, we're looking for that light at the end of the tunnel. And I think things are changing, but what makes you optimistic about this industry?
The resiliency. I mean, despite all the ups and downs, one, it's a big industry, but it's a small group of people. You come to conferences like this, when I walk through the halls and I see people see each other, the big hugs, we may compete, right? You have originator A versus originator B, servicer A versus servicer B. But at the end of the day, we are a resilient bunch that aims always to do right by that end consumer. And that, I tell you, you talk about the 30-year mortgage being so unique and all of that. People get tired of me saying that, but it's a badge of honor to work in an industry. And anybody that doesn't feel that, send them my way. I will talk to them because it is true. It is the American dream that we help. And we've been able to sustain ups and downs, high interest rate, low interest rate, too many refis, not enough refis, pandemics, forbearance, hurricanes, fires in Hawaii. And our industry always comes together and it's resilient. So that to me will always be the light at the end of the tunnel.
I love it. And I could not end this on a better high note. So thank you so much for talking today. It's been really interesting.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show or leave a comment. We'll see you back here on Monday for more news and insight.